When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Call Michael now, 041-983-2000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Tuesday morning, the 20th of December. Good morning. With much debate and discussion from now till 11 a.m, this is Michael Reid on LMFM. The closure of the emergency department at Our Lady's Hospital in Navan is imminent. In order to get an understanding of what is being planned and consider to make this transformation or reconfiguration happen, LMFM has submitted a number of Freedom of Information requests. Today, we can report on one of those requests, which was for 47 specific emails sent to and from the HSE's Office of the National Director of Acute Operations. Unfortunately, we can't tell you anything about what was written in those 47 emails. This is because our Freedom of Information request has been refused. What we can report to you, however, is the reasons for refusing our request and why it is believed it is in the public interest to deny us the opportunity of telling you what is planned for Navan Hospital. Each of these emails was written between September and October of 2021, more than a year ago, and just before, well, as we understand it anyway, the HSE raised grave concerns with Minister Stephen Donnelly about patient safety at Our Lady's Hospital in Navan, and that was in November of 2021. The reasons for not releasing the 47 emails to LMFM has been explained in a lengthy document that begins by explaining that several published reports over the last 12 years commissioned by the Department of Health and the HSE show that acute services at Our Lady's Hospital Navan are unsustainable and require change. Securing the future of smaller hospitals, a framework for development, is a report that was published in 2013, and they say that this is the solution, the required change. And we know that that solution, that change, which that report proposes, is taking the emergency department and ICU services out of the hospital. A hospital without emergency department and ICU services is called a Model 2 hospital. The correspondence we've received says removing these services now will be the last steps in moving Navan to a Model 2 hospital, because many of the changes necessary have already been implemented. But we know that there's been concern about Drogheda's capacity to take extra patients safely. So the Minister for Health commissioned a review of the process to close the emergency department in Navan. And now these documents tell us that the purpose of that review is to give people the assurance that these changes, when they happen, will be safe. It is very clear that these changes are going to happen, and they will happen soon. A final report from that review team, we are told in this correspondence, is expected soon, which seems an odd thing to say, given our understanding that the minister received the final report from the review team in early October. 47 emails passed back and forth during September and October 21 at the HSE's Office of the National Director of Acute Operations regarding the downgrading of Our Lady's Hospital in Navan. LMFM has been denied access to all 47 documents because we are told these documents deal how reconfiguration of the hospital in Navan is being managed. Release of the records concerned would disclose positions taken and to be taken, as well as plans that are yet to be finalised and implemented. We are also told that the HSE is about to implement the final changes in Navan to make it a level 2 hospital. But if these documents were to be made public, the information could result in the community asking, will this actually address patient safety? And will it improve the safety of healthcare delivery? If these 47 emails were to be released to LMFM, the concern is it could, and I quote, have a significant adverse effect on the HSE and Department of Health's joint management of the reconfiguration process in Navan. That worry is because we are told of the impact this information being made public could have on relations with all stakeholders involved. The reasons for denying LMFM access to the 47 emails about Navan are spelled out for us. One paragraph reads, if details of the discussions, processes and reports on the management of this highly sensitive matter were to become public before the issue has been concluded, this could severely impact the ongoing relationship between clinicians and HSE leadership, which is based on mutual trust and who share a common goal of resolving any concerns of patient safety. Furthermore, it says, the release of these records at this point in time could cause significant disruption to the current decision-making review process to close the emergency department and remove the ICU, a process which they say has not been concluded and details of which have not been made public. Access to these emails, we are informed, would involve the disclosure of the detail of the draft discussions, communication and feedback and positions still being undertaken, where consultations are ongoing and opinions and advice are still being sought from various HSE leaders, clinicians and experts, as well as senior leadership in the Department of Health, deliberations that are ongoing. If these details become known publicly, the result could be that it would hinder the work of the review of closing Navan's emergency department. We are told the review team will recommend how to take the final steps necessary for Navan to become a level 2 hospital, one without an emergency department or ICU. The 47 emails are not being released to us, we are told, because LMFM would become aware of a significant decision that the HSE and the department proposes to make, and that the radio station would make that decision known publicly to you. As mentioned earlier, the final report of the review of how to downgrade Navan's hospital is said to be with Minister Stephen Donnelly since the beginning of October, but the correspondence we've received this week says the review is unfinished, and it appears that there is not agreement between the review team's members. We are told there are contrasting opinions on the matter, unquote. We are also told the emails contain details about patient safety concerns. Putting those concerns into the public domain, we are told, would be contrary to the public interest because it could, and I quote, reasonably be expected to cause worry, confusion, and possibly resistance to change. Resistance to change. It's an interesting turn of phrase. What they're saying appears to be that if LMFM is given access to these emails, if we find out what the plans are for closing the emergency department in Navan and removing its ICU, you might decide, if you were to hear what the HSE is saying about this, that you do not want the emergency department or the ICU to be taken out of Navan, and you might even try to prevent it from happening. What you need to hear, we are told, is clear and concise reasoning for closing the emergency department and ICU. You need to be reassured that these changes are for the benefit of all of the community. The release of these emails to LMFM, we are told, could lead to increased levels of worry within the community, and that could be reasonably expected to cause significant harm to the safe management by the HSE of closing the emergency department and removing ICU. LMFM is told and removing ICU. LMFM is told reconfiguration is now in the final stages and that the plan to remove emergency department and ICU services from Navan may be harmed if LMFM was to be given sight of the 47 emails we requested. That is because the flow of information between the HSE and the stakeholders involved, including clinicians and other relevant staff, as well as the community, would become public knowledge. There is also a worry that releasing these emails to LMFM could harm the trust that there is between all of the stakeholders. We don't know why or how that trust could be harmed. We've just been told that there is a concern that trust between all of the stakeholders could break down. This concern has contributed to the decision not to grant LMFM access to the 47 emails in question. The correspondence to us says this would be a significant harm given the nature and impact of patient safety issues at the current Navan Hospital, and one which is likely given the reliance on continuing a cooperative and trusting relationship between the HSE and its staff, with any potential significant harm to this process being contrary to the public interest. We don't know what is actually said in these emails that could potentially cause significant harm to the cooperative and trusting relationship between the HSE and its staff. We have simply been told we are not getting the emails, and that a concern about a breakdown in trust is one of the reasons why. We'll be talking about more of those concerns with some local representatives in just a moment or two.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Now we'll get some reaction to our opening report today with TDs in County Meath. We had hoped that all of the TDs would be represented on the programme today. Johnny Gurk is with us representing Sinn Féin. Petter Tobin is with us representing AIM2. We had asked that the two ministers in the county, Fianna Fáil's Thomas Byrne and Fine Gael's Damien English, might like to react to our opening piece today, but neither minister responded. But thank you to Petter Tobin and Johnny Gurk for taking the time to be with us on the programme this morning. Johnny Gurk, what do you make of what you've been hearing?
I think, Michael, it's a distress, but it's no surprise that the HSE will not release the information about their plans. They say it's not in the public interest to do so, and if they did release the files, that it would add to people's worry and would create opposition to their plan. What do they think, Michael, withholding the information will do? You know, it will further create suspicion that the HSE has no intention of engaging in good faith. They're withholding vital information for the future of our health services in Meath. And I think, Michael, that Stephen Donnelly needs to get a grip. The buck stops with him, Michael. And the other thing, Michael, that I found interesting there in your report was, you know, the department confirmed to us in a parliamentary question, Michael, that the minister has the working group review since the 8th of October, and they seem to say, Michael, in your report there, that they didn't have it completed. So are they trying to undermine Stephen Donnelly every time they open their mouth, Michael, or are they doing it on purpose, or what is the story? I don't know.
Okay, man, that sounds a little bit muddled, understandably, I would think. Petter Tobin, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, just first of all, just to congratulate yourself and LMFM for submitting these FOIs. It is absolutely incredible that the HSE have refused to give details in relation to this. The administration of this country should be a transparent action. Citizens who are paying for the public services and for these public servants to work should be able to know exactly on what basis these decisions are made. And, you know, not only are they trying to withhold the information, but they actually, in their letter to you, quite incredibly, states that the reason for the lack of transparency would because, one, it would discommode the stakeholders. So in other words, the truth would cause a problem between the stakeholders, and the truth would lead to a lack of trust. You know, usually trust is based on stakeholders being truthful with each other, but the HSE see the truth as a danger in relation to that trust. And secondly, that it would cause worry to the citizens, because the information being made public would you know, have on would give information that would cause worry to citizens in this area, which would have the effect potentially of scuppering their plans to close the ED. So in many ways, that element of what you've just reported is very clear in saying that the HSE are hiding information, one, because it would lead to the slower process of their closing the A&E because people would see problems within it. They'd see potentially a threat to the health of patients in the area. And two, because some of the stakeholders would balk at the idea of closing it if they knew the truth. You know, it shows a HSE, a law unto themselves, you know, with no control over them. The idea that you have a report that I spoke to the minister about in the Dáil, who told me he had the report and told me that he wanted to publish the report, and now we're told that the report is not actually complete, that the final report has yet to be complete and submitted to the minister. You know, how anybody could have faith in the HSE, given the damage that's been done right across the country. You know, in just 2 days after the bypass happened in Navan, I got a report to say the three patients were taken from Meath, in an ambulance, Navan A&E was bypassed, they were brought to Drogheda, they were triaged in Drogheda, and because Drogheda was so full, they were then brought by ambulance back to Navan Hospital. So we have confusion, which is leading to negative patient outcomes as a result of the decisions these guys are making, and we have no political authority over them to hold them to account or to change their actions in any way. It's a nightmare for the people of this region.
And that probably is the bottom line. The actions are not going to change. It's very clear, I think, looking at these documents, that there is the intention of closing the emergency department, and it's not as if it's open for discussion.
There's definitely the intention there, but I will say something. Over the last while, the HSE has become more isolated in its actions. There's no doubt about that. You know, yesterday we had 760 people on trolleys, which I think equals the record that was ever had before. And we had 17 consultants coming out in Drogheda saying that the HSE's decisions are wrong. And the Mullingar figure for consultants writing a letter to say that the HSE is wrong has gone up to 10 in recent times. We've also got hundreds of staff now and GPs in County Meath who have signed a petition opposing the closure. So, you know, amongst the political class, amongst the medics and the professionals in the relevant areas, and amongst the people, The HSE are extremely isolated at the moment. Now, it will take political courage from Stephen Donnelly to stand up to these guys. They will ride roughshod over his authority until he calls them to account. And that's the worry we have in Meath at the moment, that we won't have that authority by Stephen Donnelly.
Okay. I'll come back to that because I think it gives picture that probably isn't correct about motivation. But let me go back to Johnny Gourke and those record trolley figures in hospitals yesterday. It seems by all accounts it's going to get worse going into the winter months.
Yeah, Michael, and I mean, if there was ever a time, Michael, to invest in Navan Hospital and take the pressure off Our Lady of Lourdes and take the pressure off Connolly and take the pressure off Cavan and take the pressure off Mullingar, it seems to be now. Just go back, Michael, to what happened in Limerick, Michael, that there's a group now, Michael, the Midwestern Hospital Campaign Group. They've come on again now, Michael. They have a campaign going in that area to open up Ennis and Nina again because of the chronic overcrowding in Limerick. And it shows you, Michael, that they were promised a centre of excellence, they were promised all these things. The same thing that the same words, Michael, they're talking reconfiguration, they were talking the same words that they're talking about Drogheda, and look at what's happening in Limerick, the longest waiting times, and we didn't even really come into the worst of the winter yet, Michael. And,
okay.
These are the worst numbers on record.
92 people on trolleys in Limerick yesterday.
Yeah. And that's, Michael, that's a lot to do with, Michael, the closing of Ennis and Nina. That definitely has a lot to do with it. It'll be interesting, Michael, in a month's time to see if they give us the figures, how many hospitals actually bypass Navan that would have normally went to Navan since this happened, Michael. And Stephen Donnelly and the government, Michael, needs, the buck stops with them, Michael. We can blame the HSE. Mm. The HSE are trying to do this, Michael, since 2013. The only one that can stop this is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Minister for Health.
Right, these documents talk about the various steps to completing the reconfiguration of the hospital, and that many of them have already been taken, and I imagine that includes the protocol this week and indeed the other ambulance bypass protocol to do with stroke patients and so on. It seems that the final piece of the jigsaw, if you like, is to close the emergency department and the ICU now.
It's very clear that that's strategy,
Michael. It's not happening by accident, Michael. That's strategy. Keep downgrading your services, Michael, where they can eventually say it's not safe, Michael, and then make the people feel like that they need to transfer these patients at all. Instead of investing and making Navan safe, whatever it took, Michael, that's what needs to be done, and that's what should be done.
Okay. And maybe you'd take up on that point, Petr Tobin, because it feeds into what you were saying about the motivation of the HSE, which I find very difficult to understand. Surely patient care is the only thing that they're interested in a hospital that is under-resourced. And while you might say it would be able to deal with these patients if it was invested in, I don't think that the motivation of the people deciding to close it is anything other than hoping for the best possible outcomes for patients.
Well, it's hard to agree with that, and the reason being is because I've just got a text from a person to say that they were on in the A&E waiting room for 20 hours in Drogheda A&E last night with a suspected blood clot. We know that in certain A&Es around the country, people are waiting up to 5 days for a bed, and that we have figures now that's estimated that 360 people die on an annual basis due to hospital and A&E overcrowding. And the amazing figure of 75,000 people last year going to an A&E, waiting, and leaving without being treated because of the pressure that it's under. Mm. And the figures that we've in Aintu found out last year to show that there were 105,000 adverse incidents happening in hospitals around the country. And that's people who are being damaged as a result of the lack of proper treatment, and in some cases being disabled, and in some cases dying as a result of that. So I have no confidence over the senior HSE management in terms of the delivery of a safe health service at all around the country. One of the problems I have is that the key performance indicators for the HSE are after a patient crosses the threshold of a hospital or an A&E. So in other words, they don't measure what's happening to people before they actually get in to see a doctor. And it's that lack of measurement of those people who are not getting to see doctors in a timely fashion in A&Es and in GPs and elsewhere. That means the focus of the HSE is not on that aspect. And you know that aspect is a key element of people maintaining good health and trying to get better. You know, there's a serious crisis here within the HSE. The HSE are running a plan that was designed in 2013. And you and I know that, you know, Mead and Louth has changed significantly since 2013. The population has radically increased, maybe by as much as 60 to 70,000 in our region since 2013. That plan is out of date. And the idea that they would continue to implement this out-of-date plan is incredible. But again, the truth is they're allowed to do so because their political masters allowed them to do it. You know, I've asked Damien English and Thomas Byrne on your show and in the Dáil a number of times to delete the line in the 2013 framework document to say that Navan should be reduced to a Level 2 hospital. Mm. If the political masters deleted that line, the HSE would have no authority to proceed in the manner that they're doing.
Okay, but there's several reports going over 12 years that say that that's what happens or should happen. And would it not be better to wait 20 hours and to be seen then by a doctor who has the resources to treat you effectively than to wait 20 hours in a hospital that can't cope with your condition?
If there were a hospital with doctors and the resources necessary to treat people, an argument could be made in those terms, but there aren't. And like the truth of the matter is that, you know, for very, very serious issues like stroke, like major head trauma from an accident, you know, like a major heart attack, you know, we understand that there are probably hospitals that are better suited to treating people in relation to that. But as Ruairí Hanley, who's the PRO of the Save Navan Hospital campaign, has said for many years, that A&Es mostly deal with the grannies with pneumonia. So these are the low-level issues that are very serious but need proper care. And if those grannies with pneumonia can get into an A&E and have the backup of an ICU, that means those A&Es can treat those people properly and those patients don't end up in the likes of Drogheda or the Mater or Beaumont. And so, therefore, they're not causing problems and stress on those hospitals as a result. So, you know, different A&Es have different roles to play. all of them, if they're well-resourced, can keep the stress and the pressure down on the system in the whole region. Mm. And that's what we're arguing for. And, you know, if the HSC think that, you know, they're going to find it easy to proceed with the closure, with the last step, as they say it in the documents that they've given to you, they've got another thing coming. Because, you know, I was quite amazed that the last hospital meeting we had just less than a fortnight ago, yep, the room was packed with people from Meath who are, you know, determined to fight this. And we had hundreds of people standing in minus 2 degrees last Monday outside of the hospital. The determination by the people of Meath is massive. And if Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael continue with what they're doing, they'll find that they will have as many TDs as they have in Roscommon. When they closed Roscommon A&E, they'll have none, because people won't tolerate this. I'm driving around Navan at the moment, and I see these 8x4 posters from Damien English wishing people a happy Christmas. And I'm thinking in my head, this guy will be better served the people of Meath if he actually got up off his behind and start fighting for the hospital and make sure that the HSC management are pushed back upon, and that we have a health service that we can trust in the years in the future.
I'm sure Damien English would say that he is fighting for the hospital, as I'm sure you'll agree. Yeah. Johnny Gourke, what about this line in these documents about the relationship between clinicians and the HSE leadership? We're being told that not only could it have an impact on the relationship between the doctors and the HSE management, but it could severely impact on that relationship. What do you make of that?
I don't know, Michael, but when you have 17 consultants, Michael, from Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital saying that it's not safe to send any more patients to Navan, the HSE are rockshotting over that and sending extra patients to Drogheda the next day after the consultants. You don't have to release the Freedom of Information request to you, Michael, to know that what they're doing, Michael, they're not doing what the consultants are saying without releasing that Freedom of Information, Michael. So the day after, Michael, or a couple of days after, the consultants said that Drogheda wasn't fit to take these patients, what did they do, Michael? The HSE, they divert more patients to Drogheda. So I don't think it's anything to do, Michael, with your Freedom of Information, Michael. And I find it, Michael, astonishing that the HSE won't give the Freedom of Information to yourself, Mike, or, Michael, to Oireachtas members like myself, Michael. Mm. I've constantly asked. Stephen Donnelly apologising, Michael, to us all the time for not keeping us up to date, but he still does it the following week, Michael.
Okay.
They won't release, Michael, astonishing, because it would lead to the resistance from the people of Meath. What do they think it's going to do, Michael? What is it doing when there's a vacuum there?
People listening to us are better off without this information, apparently, and I'm sure they'll tell us what they think of that. We have to leave it there for the moment, but thank you both, indeed, for joining us. Founder and leader of AIM2, Petter Tobin, and Sinn Féin TD, Johnny Gourke. As mentioned earlier on, we did ask Minister Damien English and Minister Thomas Byrne if they also wanted to respond to that report this morning, but we didn't receive a response from either of the ministers.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
On the 28th of December 1972, three no warning bombs exploded in Belturbet County Cavan, Clonas County Monaghan, and Pettigo County Donegal. Two children, Patrick Stanley, who was just 16 years of age, and Geraldine O'Reilly, who was just 15 years of age, were killed in the Belturbet bombing. And tragically, Pat McCabe also died on the 4th of January 1973 when he fell from a roof he was repairing that was damaged in the Clonus bomb. Numerous other people were injured to such an extent that they required hospitalisation. We are seeking assistance to identify the person depicted in a photo fit of the driver of the stolen car as compiled by the guard at the checkpoint at Halland Bridge. To identify the person depicted in a photo fit of the person who was the driver of the car stolen from Main Street, Belturbet, as compiled by a number of civilian witnesses. To identify the driver and occupants of the car stolen from Main Street, Belturbet, as per the description provided by a number of civilian witnesses. To identify the individuals who were in Belturbet on the 28th of December 1972, one of whom was wearing a distinctive Dunlop jacket. For information in relation to the whereabouts of the registration plates from the Lagoon Blue 4 Cortina, registration number BIA477, which was stolen from Belturbet on the 28th of December 1972, which have never been recovered. To identify the man who was observed driving a stolen Morris 1100 in Northern Ireland on the 28th of December 1972, who was described as having missing fingers. And any additional information which may assist an Gairdsí Chonaill with our investigation.
Now, that's Chief Superintendent Alan McGarvin giving some details of the 1972 Bell Turbine bombings. And really remarkable, the information that was given at that press conference yesterday and on Crime Call on television last night, for that matter. Margaret Irwin of Justice for the Forgotten joins us. A very good morning to you, Margaret, and thanks for taking the time to be with us on the programme today.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for having me on.
It was a wealth of information, wasn't it? 50 years on since this atrocity.
Yes. Extraordinary.
Nine suspects listed, descriptions of those people, some photo fits, a number of cars identified, and indeed the reg plates of those cars.
Yes, that's right. Well, of course, the reg number of the car would have been known for a long time, since Judge Henry Barron's report back in 2004. So, you know, we've had some of that for quite some time. And we've also, Justice for the Forgotten, has had copies of those photo fits that you saw last night as well for a very long time. In fact, they've been up on our website, I think, for many years.
Okay. But 50 years on, it is very unusual for the Gardaí to make an appeal like this. Why do you think this is happening now?
Well, I mean, the reason that this is happening is because there is a full Garda investigation, a criminal investigation taking place. This was preceded by a full review during 2021-22. And when that was complete, new lines of inquiry were found. And the superintendent in Monaghan, Pat O'Connell, then wanted to continue and to have a full investigation, and this was approved by the chief superintendent Alan McGovern, and also by the assistant commissioner Mr. Michael Gunn.
And
so that is why this is part of the investigation now, that they are seeking as much information as possible to assist in this investigation.
They seem clear in their own minds as to who is responsible. And despite it being 50 years ago, I think they'd still be relatively young people.
Well, I don't think they know who is responsible. I think the whole idea is to try to find that out. But I don't think they're relatively young people. They would certainly be in their very late 60s, I would say, and indeed 70s at this stage, if they're still alive.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant by relatively young. And I have to say, I was shocked listening to the ages of the people who they believe were responsible for this atrocity, and indeed the death of 15-year-old Geraldine O'Reilly and 16-year-old Patrick Stanley. We might just take another listen to some more of what the chief superintendent had to say.
Prior to the explosion, at approximately 9:50 p.m., a Ford Cortina was seen double parked outside Hunt's Pharmacy on Main Street. It is believed that this was in fact a Lagoon Blue Ford Cortina, registration number BIA477, which was stolen from the main street that night. A witness gave a detailed description of the driver, from which photo fit number 2 was compiled. The witness also gave a description of the other occupants of this car. The first description related to the driver, who was a male, about 18 years old, 5'8" in height, thin build, long, thin, pale face, long, dark brown curly hair, a very conspicuous nose, wearing a dark blazer, double-breasted, with wide lapels, collar, light-coloured shirt and a tie, and he wore a steel or silver band around his wrist. The second description is of a female. In the rear of the car, described as being about 18 or 19 years old, tall, blonde hair, coming down over her shoulders, parted in the centre and pushed away from her forehead. She was also described as being sharp-featured, pale complexion, dressed in a long, dark red overcoat and polo neck pullover.
Chief Superintendent Alan McGovern. Again, there he went on to say that the other two men in the back of that car were very similar to the driver, maybe a little bit older, maybe about 20 years of age. But I really was taken aback to think that 18-year-olds, an 18-year-old male and an 18-year-old woman, for that, Margaret, were out trying to cause such terrible destruction.
Well, I mean, the 18-year-old male, I think that would have been very common on all sides at the time. The 18-year-old woman would certainly be extremely unusual. We've only once come across a woman as being involved in any attacks carried out, really, I suppose, mostly by the Glen Ann gang. We've only ever come across one woman who was in any way involved. So certainly that was a great surprise. I know it had been said that the Garda who stopped the car at Ahalane thought there might have been a woman in the car, and we probably put that down at the time to thinking somebody who was long-haired might have been a woman. But this description of the person seen in the car in the actual town of Beltorbet seems very, very clear and very definite that this was a woman getting into the stolen car with the registration BIA 477. So yes, that certainly is a surprise.
Okay, 50 years have passed, but the guards appear to be of the opinion that there is...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Somebody who has significant information and has had it all this time, no doubt, but hasn't come forward, and they're hoping that they will do that now.
Oh, yes. I mean, certainly, I think there are quite a number of people still around, still alive, who would have full information on it. And, of course, you know, things may have changed over the years and people may be prepared to come forward now, 50 years later, who wouldn't have been able to come forward in the aftermath of the bombing. So let's hope that there will be a positive outcome to this.
Absolutely. And yeah. justice for the families of the two children.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, who've been fighting for so long. If I might, I'd just like to mention as well that obviously yesterday was also the 47th anniversary of the bombing of K.S. Tavern in Dundalk and the attack on Silver Bridge, Donnelly's Bar, Silver Bridge. 3 hours later, a double attack by the Glen Ann gang, which happened in 19th of December 75. So I'd just like to mention that as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And two fatalities at that bomb at K's Tavern, wasn't it?
two fatalities there and three fatalities in Donnelly's Bar in Silverbridge.
And of course, I think a lot of people were thinking about Patrick McCabe yesterday. Was seriously injured in Clonus and then died sometime afterwards after falling off a roof, wasn't it?
No, I think he was killed instantly. He was one of a number of workers who were repairing the damage caused by the Clonus bomb, which exploded 27 minutes before the Belturbet bomb. And he and other workers had been trying to make the building safe for a number of days after the bombing. And it was on the 4th of January that he unfortunately fell from a ladder, and I think he was actually killed instantly.
Okay.
So, you know, we weren't really aware of Patrick until very recently. And, you know, his family feel forgotten because he left behind a widow and eight young children.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's a lot to take in. I'm sure it couldn't have been easy at all for that family. Dreadful, dreadful thing that goes back 50 years. But do you believe we're getting close towards justice?
I'm always optimistic, Michael, and I'm very hopeful. And I think it is such a positive development that the Gardaí have really, taken the bit between their teeth and called for a new investigation, initiated a new investigation into this, and maybe this can happen in other cases as well.
Okay, and we'll conclude by hearing from the Chief Superintendent who was inviting people to come forward yesterday if they do have information. But Margaret, thank you indeed
for
joining us on
the programme
as always. That's Margaret Irwin of the group Justice for the Forgotten.
There are people out there who know who carried out these crimes. They may not have been able to speak at that time or since. Perhaps maybe they feel they are able to speak. With the passage of time, relationships may have changed, or as they're getting older, maybe they want to speak before an opportunity to do so is lost. I am asking them to make contact with the investigation team and to help on Garda Síochána to try and get some answers for the families of those killed and for the victims and for those who were injured in Belturbet, Clonus or Pettigo. I ask anyone with information in relation to Belturbet, Clonus or Pettigo bombings, or indeed any other bombing, to contact the Incident Room in Ballyconnell Garda Station at 049 952 5580. The Garda confidential free phone at 1800 666 111. Crime Stoppers 1800 250 025. Our Crime Stoppers Northern Ireland 0800 555 111. Thank you very much.
It really is incredible, isn't it, that that investigation is so live 50 years on. And let's hope that it's an investigation that concludes successfully. Thanks to Paddy, who was in touch with us, by the way, about the hospital in Navan, saying that the ministers that didn't come onto the programme tomorrow will be wondering if there'll be ministers tomorrow. Thank you indeed for that. If you'd like to make comment on the programme today, as always, we would love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 041 983 2000. That's 041 983 2000. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 1800 658. If you want to text a comment or WhatsApp it, 086 1800 658, and you can email michael@lmfm.ie.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Now, the Oireachtas Committee on Gender Equality has recommended the government to implement the recommendations that has come to it from the Citizens' Assembly on Gender Equality. What that means is that there would be a referendum which would ask three different questions about gender equality. But the one that stands out most of all is what's called Article 41.2. And there's been a lot of talk about Article 41.2 over a long period of time. In particular, it says, the state recognises that by her life within the home, woman gives to the state a support without which the common good cannot be achieved.
It was decided weeks after the referendum to repeal the 8th as the next important step in advancing equality between men and women. And I know it's taken quite some time to get to this point, to have the Assembly and to have the Oireachtas Committee do its work and make its report. But certainly I can give you the commitment that this will very much be on the agenda, or rather, what I should say is responding to the report will be very much on the agenda of government in 2023, and we will respond to the recommendations in a structured way and an early course. I am in favour of constitutional change to provide a modern definition of family in our constitution and also to remove gendered language. And I think it is extremely useful to have this report because referendums are easy to lose and often hard to win. And the fact that we have a cross-party wording, I think, is very helpful in that regard. I can't make a commitment today on a referendum next year. It's something that will have to be discussed with the new cabinet and with the new Attorney General. But I can give you the commitment that this is work that I really want to make progress on and follow through on. The Citizens Assembly, while I don't agree with every recommendation, I think it was a great body of work and does point the way forward. And I know that your committee has built on that. And we want to make sure that we move this agenda forward next year. And I would certainly commit to a structured response and a meaningful response to all the recognitions and all the recommendations in early course.
Right, that's the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Let's speak now to Sandra McCullough, who is the Women's Economic Equality Coordinator with the National Women's Council of Ireland. Good morning to you, Sandra, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. I don't think it's overstating it to say that this has taken a significant step forward.
Good morning, Michael. Yeah, absolutely. It's a really important development for gender equality. As you said, this has been kind of knocking around for some time now. It's been an issue that the Women's Council and our members have been campaigning on for years. It is a recommendation that the Citizens' Assembly on Gender Equality, this group of kind of everyday citizens from all over the country, they made these set of recommendations to government. And this development now, this report by the Oireachtas Committee, I guess it brings us another step closer to those recommendations becoming a reality.
Okay, and it's not that you want that clause deleted from the Constitution, as offensive as it may be to some women.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's very general recognition that the clause as it currently stands is kind of outdated and discriminatory, and it uses very sexist language. But I suppose what we would like to see, and what this recommendation now will bring forward, is that we want to see a valuing of care in our constitution. But in its current kind of iteration, you know, it's really outdated. It doesn't recognise kind of the different roles that women have in our modern society. It also doesn't recognise the work that men do as carers, and doesn't recognise that men have, you know, responsibilities and duties as in terms of care. And it doesn't recognise the kind of, it's very much a definition of a family. It's a very outdated definition of family, which is kind of this kind of two-parent kind of model where the woman stays home. It doesn't recognise the reality of kind of, you know, lone parents, LGBTQ families, and that kind of thing. But what this recommendation, what's really important about it, is that it will amend, so it will replace and amend that valuing of care in the Constitution. So it will continue to recognise the value and importance of care, but it will do it in a much more inclusive way that kind of, you know, it brings in kind of all the modern forms of family we have, and also recognises that care doesn't just take place in the home. Care takes place outside the home as well, paid, unpaid care. It's a really broad recognition of the value of care. And we saw that, I thought, during the pandemic that, you know, care really was like the backbone of our functioning kind of society and economy in terms of the work that childcare workers do, home care workers, and care in the home. So this kind of recommendation will kind of value care in a more inclusive way.
Okay, but it will still relate, will it not, for the most part at least, to women? Because it's predominantly women who provide care.
Well, that's interesting, yeah. I suppose it's to make it a little bit more gender neutral, but in practice, yes, absolutely, you're right. Women continue to kind of bear primary responsibility for care. And so what's really important about this report is that it makes the recommendations on the constitutional, which, you know, it's a foundational document, really important, that's our values as a society. But what this report and what the Citizens' Assembly delivered as well are a whole set of other practical recommendations that can help to shift that balance of care. So, for example, they also included recommendations on a universal public model of childcare. They included recommendations on improving parental leave, on ensuring that lone parents have equal access to parental leave. So again, things like that and kind of increased payments for parental leave, they're really important to shift that balance so that men take up parental leave, they get more involved in care work. There's a whole series of recommendations to make that a reality as well.
But it requires a cultural change, does it not?
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, and the Constitution is that document, I suppose. It's kind of the highest law on the land. It sets our values as a society. So it's really important that it's in there in that foundational document. But all those practical recommendations, those recommendations around education and awareness, around starting that from school, from early years from school, and kind of trying to shift that cultural expectation that we still have, that kind of women are responsible for care.
That's if they can afford to give that care, because quite often it's unpaid, isn't it?
Absolutely. And again, there's a whole series of recommendations around paid and unpaid care. There's a whole series of recommendations around ensuring people can provide care, ensuring that the social welfare system supports people to provide care, supports people in transitions in and out of paid work, and then also support care workers, because we know, I mean, we've talked a lot again over the past couple of years around how little we value the paid care workforce, you know, the childcare workers, some really important developments over the last year for childcare workers in terms of getting a pay scale for the first time. But this report advances that even further because it makes even more recommendations to build on those developments to ensure that the paid care workforce, whether it's in childcare or whether it's in elder care, that they have a pay structure including pensions, maternity leave, those kind of pieces that will also enable that workforce to be sustainable over time as well.
Okay. There seems to be very little in the way of holding a constitution. There seems to be consensus on this and that the clause is outdated and sexist and doesn't belong in our constitution and should be amended because, as we mentioned, the Oireachtas Committee have endorsed the recommendations from the Citizens' Assembly, but the Constitutional Convention, the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission and the UN Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women have all made exactly the same recommendations, have they not?
They have, that's right. So I suppose, you know, like you say, that this has been going around for a while and every time we have a conversation on this, it comes back with the same response, that people just, you know, recognise the need to kind of amend it rather than just to do away with it. Because we don't want to do it away. It's important that the Constitution recognises care. So that's why we need to amend it to do it in a way that's more inclusive. So I suppose, you know, as the Taoiseach said there in your clip, I mean, it's really important now that this is cross-party support. You know, first of all, we had this, you know, representative group of citizens sit and spend a year listening to all of this evidence and come up with this this conclusion. And now, over the past year, we've had this Oireachtas Committee, which is made up of representatives of all the parties. And they've again come to this kind of unanimous kind of view that this is what needs to happen. We need to, you know, replace Article 41.2.
Okay. Well, what we're talking about is 41.21. What about 41.22, which says that the state will endeavour to ensure mothers shall not be obliged by economic necessity to engage in labour to the neglect of their duties in the home?
Yeah, so it's all part of the same kind of piece that again, what the recommendation has kind of set out is that there will be a whole kind of series of supports for people. It recognises kind of care inside and outside of the home. It says that the state should take reasonable measures to support that. So I suppose, again, you have all those other series of recommendations that come in there, which is around supporting people through the social protection system, supporting people through parental leave, for example. Like at the moment, you know, our paid parental leave system in Ireland is probably among the worst in Europe in terms of the amount of time that people get for paid leave and just the payment, I suppose, that people get. It doesn't make it a reality. So it goes things like that, those practical measures that can support people to be able to take that time to care in the home, to look after their kids, but also to be able to stay connected to the workforce and so on.
Okay, we'll leave it there for the moment. It looks like we'll be voting on it at some stage, possibly next year. Is that what you'd figure, based on what we heard from Leo Vrecker?
At the moment, and as the Taoiseach there said, we recognise that there is a kind of process, I suppose, in bringing about a referendum, and there's a job of work for the government, for the Electoral Commission, and so on. So I suppose we're hoping to hear more about that in the new year, as government has time to kind of digest the report and that.
Okay, Sandra, we'll leave it there. Thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Sandra McCullough, Women's Economic Equality Coordinator with the National Women's Council of Ireland. Now, we were talking about the move to close the emergency department and with it ICU in Our Lady's Hospital in Navan. Thought we'd get a different perspective on this with a letter that was published in the Irish Times on Monday of this week from Patrick Bro, and it says, I refer to a report in the Irish Times which reported that Navan was set to receive 50% fewer ambulances and that John Ryan, the chairman of Meath Council of Trade Unions and a long-time hospital campaigner, stated that there was a need for an emergency department near Tara Mines due to the risk of an industrial accident. Navan General Hospital is the least suitable hospital to treat victims of an industrial accident. By Mr. Ryan's way of thinking, there should be a fully equipped and staffed emergency department in every town in Ireland with a major industrial complex in order to decrease early mortality and improve survivor outcome. The equipment, technology and medical expertise needs to be concentrated into a small number of large hospitals, which is exactly what the Trauma Strategy Group is doing in Ireland at present. In relation to what's appropriate and feasible for Navan General Hospital, it would be far better that he and his fellow campaigners support the local and national healthcare experts to reconfigure the hospital to provide safe care to appropriate patients commensurate with the available resources and staff. There is nothing more stressful for healthcare personnel than trying to treat seriously ill or injured patients in the absence of appropriate resources and expert backup. Allow the healthcare experts to get on with their important work of making Navan Hospital a safer place for patients. As I say, that's a letter that was published in the Irish Times on Monday of this week that was written by Patrick Bro.
Michael at lmfm.ie.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Now, thanks to Ollie, who's in Dundalk and on the phone to us. He says he'd like to point out that the old Dunn Stores building in Park Street in Dundalk has been lying empty for 20 years. Is there any way the council could make it livable for Ukrainians? It's an interesting idea, Ollie. Thank you indeed for the call. If you do want to call us yourself, if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us, it's 0419832000. Text or WhatsApp 0861800658. We're going to go back to some of the concerns of teachers, parents and indeed children, I think, in Scoil-Mhuire in RD, an issue that we've been talking about quite a bit on the programme over the last couple of weeks. It's an issue that was raised once again in the Dáil last week by Fine Gael's Fergus O'Dowd.
Can I just raise a point in relation to the four schools in RD? Three of them have DESH status. One of them, Scoil-Mhuire na Tróchra, their appeal for DESH status has been refused. The outcome means that there are 288 girls in this school who are excluded from additional educational supports and indeed school meals. These benefits apply to other primary schools in the town of RD. And indeed, 60%, 6 out of 10 of these girls have siblings in other DESH schools. And their appeal is being turned down. Is there a way can be found to review again this decision? Because it seems to me and to the families that there seems to be a gender inequality somewhere, an unintended one, but one that is there nevertheless, that these 288 girls are denied what all the other boys in primary schools in RD have.
As you'll be aware, one in four schools have now DASH status. It was increased significantly in the budget. There was also significant expansion of the Hot School Meals programme, both to primary and to post-primary schools, along with a number of other different initiatives to help parents who have school-going children. However, in relation to DASH, there is an appeal mechanism there. I understand that the school that you're referencing has already appealed. I can bring it to the attention of the department if you wish to speak with me in relation to it afterwards, Deputy.
Right, and that's the Minister, Josepha Madigan, responding to Fergus O'Dowd in the Dáil last week. Time now, as is usual, around this time on a Tuesday for our weekly visit to the Garda Crime Desk. As usual, there's a number of incidents which Garda are investigating locally, and perhaps you can assist with those investigations. Sergeant Paddy Smith joins us for the report this week, and thank you indeed for doing so. We're going to begin in Dunboyne and a burglary that occurred on the 15th of December.
Good morning, Michael. Yes, on the 15th of December between 9:40 a.m. and 10 p.m. at a private residence at Holsteiner Park in Dunboyne, it was forced to be entering through the rear window. The home was entered and unfortunately was ransacked with a large amount of jewellery taken. This particular residence is actually within a gated community which can only be accessed by residents. So my colleagues have conducted local house-to-house inquiries and the scene was technically examined, and we are seeking local assistance of any person that may have seen anything suspicious or out of place in the area. I would ask that they contact my colleagues at Ashbourne Garda Station on 01-801-0600 or the Garda Confidential Line on 1-800-666-111.
And a second burglary that occurred on Thursday of last week, this one in Bellewstown.
Yes, again on the 15th of December, another house was broken into between 6:15 p.m. and 7:40 a.m. at a residence in Bellewstown, County Meath, which was forcibly entered through the front door. Unfortunately, again, the house was ransacked and various items, again including jewellery, was also taken. So, the usual, I'm looking for any local assistance or any person seeing anything suspicious or out of place in the area that would contact my colleagues at Laytown Garda Station on 041-981-3320 or the Garda Confidential Line again on 1-800-666-111.
Next to Hardman's Gardens in Drogheda, and some criminal damage to a number of cars, and this happened over a number of days, was it?
Yes, that's correct. Between the 13th and the 15th of December, a number of vehicles were damaged and forcibly entered in the Hardman's Gardens Estate in Drogheda. The incident on the 13th occurred after 8 p.m, whilst the incident on the 15th occurred during daylight hours. Now, Drogheda Gardaí have carried out a number of local inquiries. They've gathered CCTV and they've spoken with local persons and vehicles who may have been in the area. But we're seeking more information from the local community, and even if you're in possession of any such information, to contact my colleagues at Drogheda Garda Station on 041-987-4200 or again the Garda Confidential Line 1-800-666-111.
Another burglary to report on. This one occurred on Saturday in Dunlear.
Yes, on the 17th of December, a burglary occurred in another private residence at Marvel, Dunlear, County Louth. This occurred between 8:55 and 19:20. So the entry was gained through a rear bedroom window. Again, a substantial amount of property was taken. My colleagues have conducted house-to-house inquiries and have gathered CCTV, which shows the offending vehicle leaving in the direction of Clare Head. If you're in the area at the time you saw anything suspicious, to contact my colleagues at Drogheda on 041-987-4200 or again the Garda Confidential Line 1-800-666-111.
And we go to Ashbourne next, where it appears somebody set a truck on fire on Saturday.
Yes, on the 17th of December at Primestown in Ashbourne, County Meath, a Renault truck was the subject of a deliberate arson attack, with the vehicle being completely destroyed. CCTV shows two males setting the vehicle alight between 2:30 a.m. and 3:15 a.m. We're seeking the public assistance, and if you have any information about this crime, to contact the detective unit at Ashbourne Garda Station on 01-801-0600 or the Garda Confidential Line again, 1-800-666-111.
Thank you indeed, Sergeant Paddy Smith. We'll return to the Garda Crime Desk in around the same time on the 3rd of January. But that's the last list of reports for this year. You're going to stay with us, though, because I think you've some important information to give to people coming into the Christmas period, and some reason for people to be cautious. And we'll come back and hear about some of that advice that you're offering to people just after this break.
The Michael Reid Show with Airgrid, managing and developing the national electricity grid so that it's fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
Now, as we said before the break, Sergeant Paddy Smith has stayed with us because there's some advice, Sergeant, that you wanted to give to people going into the Christmas period. And the reason for this is that you've seen an increase in a number of incidents. And one of those is the theft of items from vehicles.
Yes, Michael, and thanks for the invitation coming in. We've noticed a significant increase in theft from parked vehicles in the last number of weeks. And obviously, this is going to be extremely, especially prevalent coming into the Christmas week. So I just want to hear to say, when you're parking your vehicle in public areas, just to bear in mind a few things. It's always the small things, really, that are the most prevalent. You know, sure, your windows are closed, your doors are locked, your alarm is set. One of the big things as well, too, especially with Christmas shopping this week, is do not leave property on view inside your vehicle. Cash, debit cards, any valuable items.
Mm. Or the Christmas shopping.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is, as I said, is most prevalent this week. You know, if you are going to store any items, please store it in a secure location, out of sight, more than likely in the boot. But when you're doing so, just, you know, be very conscious of where you park your vehicle. Avoid parking in isolated places at night time and park in well lit up areas. And this is, it's coming to this time of the week now as well. So we just want to be, just to highlight that to our listeners here today.
Yeah, and it's just a nightmare if somebody breaks your window as well. Apart from what's gone, you've all the hassle of clearing up and getting it sorted out, and you don't do that very quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, we also are going to talk about members of the public, gangsters, I suppose, impersonating members of An Garda Síochána. You've seen a lot of this in recent months.
Yes, we have. And one of my main reasons for being here is just to highlight the appeal again. I know we've had six incidents of criminals purporting to be members of An Garda Síochána. Now, the word seems to have got out that only one of them has been successful. So in essence, Michael, what it is, it's a scam. These guys, criminals, are purporting to be plainclothes detectives. They're very plausible, they're very mannerly. They will call to your front or your back door. They're specifically targeting our elderly community living in rural areas. Thankfully, in Ireland, there's a lot of trust with the public within An Garda Síochána, and these criminals are preying on that trust. And the scam, in essence, what they're doing is they're arriving to your front door with a bundle of 50s, and they're saying to the homeowner, number one, we have a guy arrested in the patrol car out here. Can you go check your money? Or number two, we're after finding money on your driveway. Can you go in and check, is that your money?
Okay, all right.
And in essence, what they're doing then is they're looking for the invitation into the house. And I must stress, it's not by force, it's by invitation. And if the homeowner invites these guys in, one guy will obviously distract the homeowner and search the, more likely, the bedroom, or they'll just go to the purse, take the money, and they're gone within seconds. Mm. So I'm here to reiterate and highlight again that the guards will never call to your home looking for cash. Mm.
But you can understand why people would let them in if somebody was at your door like that with a wad of money saying, is this yours?
Yes.
And it's well worth repeating it for people that that's commonplace now, so be very, very suspicious if that does happen.
Absolutely. And what we, you know, Meath is blessed with two main motorways running through it. It gives great accessibility, but also gives opportunities for travelling criminals to come both from the north and south of the county. But my advice would be, if there's a person calling to your door that you do not know, what we call them, cold callers, you don't expect them to be at your door, do not let them in. If you need to speak to them, bring them over to a window that you can see them. Do not open the door to them. If they're purporting to be members of An Garda Síochána, look for their identification.
Do these fellas tend to have identification?
They seem to be kind of flashing this, some sort of a badge, but not actually showing the identification.
Right.
And, you know, if you're not happy, don't let them in. Ring your local Garda station. If it is a real Garda, they will be patient. They will wait for you to ascertain and confirm their identity. But, you know, chain locks, that sort of stuff, keeping your back door locked, keeping your front door locked whilst inside the house. Just be very aware of your surroundings. From my point of view, calling to the victims of crime, these guys seem to be targeting rural locations, the elderly community. And interestingly enough, houses built in the 20s or 30s, that I can imagine that these guys believe that there's an older generation living in the house that was previously their family home, and they're specifically targeting this sort of clientele, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think there's an awful lot of people who would have great respect for the guards and wouldn't want to do something to offend a Garda. Would it be offensive to ask for identification or to say, I'm not letting you in until I ring the police station?
Absolutely. It's your home. You do not let anyone into your home that you don't want or you don't trust or you don't know. If they are Gardaí, they will show you identification. They will ask you to ring their local guard station to confirm their identity. I mean, it's your home. You know, it's our castle. You know, you've got to look after it. And as I said, these guys are preying on the trust, especially of the elder generation, who would always have the front and back door open to let neighbours in. It's just the way they were reared back in that times. But we're now saying, please, just if you're unsure, just dial 999. Do not let anybody into your house that you don't feel or you don't want inside. You're not comfortable with.
Right. It's a bizarre situation, I think, for people. I don't know. You also want to talk about home security as well, apart from that scenario with people purporting to be members of An Garda Síochána. You have a lot of people trying to get access to your house.
Yeah, and especially this will be more prevalent again coming up to Christmas week. I was only sitting down with my kids there during the week, and we looked at one of our favourite Christmas movies, Home Alone. And there's a great scene in it there where Kevin is only 8 or 9 years of age, and these guys are trying to break into the house. Mm. And what he'd done was he put on a fake party. And in essence, what he was doing, he was showing that there was life in the property. I mean, the COVID burglary rate almost hit the floor, went to zero.
Yeah.
Simply because there was people in their house.
Everyone was home.
There was life in their house. Mm. The majority of burglars do not want confrontation. They want to get in and out of your house, but no, especially when it's vacant. So my message simply is a few checklists. I mean,
Don't leave the back door open.
Don't leave the back door
open. Even if you've done it all your life.
Yeah, Garda Síochána launched the Operation Tor, and one of the biggest messages is light up and lock up. I know we're living in an energy crisis. I totally understand that. But from my point of view, especially around the Christmas time, is show life in your property. Be the Kevin of Home Alone. If you have neighbours, you know, if you're leaving to see loved ones over the Christmas period, put a forward plan in place. Have neighbours call your house. Have cars strategically moved. The biggest time actually for Christmas is the bins. It's a big show of, say, kids have got stuff from Santa. There's boxes outside that haven't been emptied or that have been emptied and haven't been removed. These are sort of stuff that I would point out. I mean, the majority of burglaries occur to the rear of the property. And interestingly enough, if you're living in a bungalow, where would you think is the most common place to break into a bungalow?
Where would I think?
Yeah, just a, you know.
Yeah, the back window, is it?
Yeah, it's basically the open window of the downstairs toilet.
Okay.
We naturally leave the open window for let out natural odours and all that sort of stuff. But unfortunately, that window is left open and it's most common area in bungalows. So I'm just asking our listeners to think like a burglar. Yeah. You know, if you're going away, if you've lost the key of your house, how am I going to get into my house? Is there something there that's left open, that's not secure? Is there a garage left open, you know, that an implement can be used? We just got to be more aware. COVID, for me, showed what the agency of the state, what community spirit is all about. The GA clubs were fantastic. The public health nurses were great. The guards were great as well, too. We all worked together to identify the vulnerable people in our society. So I'm especially asking over the Christmas period just to be wary of those vulnerable people and be wary of your home security.
Very good. Thank you indeed, Sergeant Paddy Smith. I hope you have a peaceful Christmas, and please pass on that sentiment to all of your colleagues. And thank you indeed for joining us. The Garda Crime Desk returns in January. Our next programme is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Bye-bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.